in the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
As you know, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of the well-known personalities in the UFO and paranormal fields are involved in lecture tours, and sometimes they do that just to meet people, maybe sell a few books, maybe make a few dollars. But I should point out that very, very few people in the UFO field make money. Now, years ago, Jim Moseley got on the lecture circuit, and I think in part he was undercutting the late Major Donald Kehoe. He said, I can go on there and give you a perfectly entertaining UFO lecture, and I'll charge less than he did. And a couple of times I went on those lectures when Jim didn't want to accept the amount of money they offered. It was pretty good, you know. You get your plane fare paid, you make $500 or $1,000 for a lecture tour. This is not like a famous politician getting, you know, $500,000.
He made $500 40 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my. Oh, boy.
We are in the wrong business. I don't do lectures now. You know, I'm not a lecturer. I do very good radio, but I do not do lectures. On the other hand, over the years, I think Jim finally gave it up when he got into his senior years, and he stopped doing it. I never pursue the lecture circuit. I know Stanton Friedman does a lot of that. You do it occasionally, and as a matter of fact, this month, and we're in January of 2012, in case you're listening to the show later on, you are going to do a few. Can you tell us more?
Well, I've been invited out to California to do a sweep through the state, and this will be my third time back there in, 14 years. I go about every 5 years, it seems. And I'm going to be up in San Jose on January 15th, and then the 17th and 18th, I'll be in the L.A. area at L.A. MUFON and also Orange County MUFON. And I was invited out. I was out there last summer for the International Symposium. And one of the people there who I talked to books their tours through the state. So I was asked to come out. I'm doing something a little different. I do have quite a number of presentations. I think about six now. And I'm going to be looking at and really analyzing the pop culture connections between the UFO phenomenon and attendant phenomenon like abductions, crop circles, cattle mutilations, religious miracles, and looking at the whole concept of the media and how the media formulates and kind of creates belief systems within the culture. And it's going to be fun, freewheeling. I've got over 350 images in my presentation. I kind of work on my stand-up routine beforehand and crack some jokes, keep it light, keep it entertaining, thoughtful, and creative. I tell people when I get up there that if a quarter of you don't walk out pissed off at me, I haven't done my job. So that's kind of my my modus operandi in these things. Of course, you know, being the trickster, you got to come up with some out-of-the-box thinking to make people scratch their heads a little.
So basically you have to pull a few tricks.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't pull the tricks, there's no fun.
Well, remember when I tried to tell one of my jokes to Kevin Randall, he wasn't amused. One of my first appearances here at the Paracast as a host, I asked, hey, have you heard about the new Dream Team, the Roswell Dream Team?
I don't remember this. Maybe it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah,
could you tell me more?
I can't Randall it. It's full of Schmidt.
The sounds of silence, ladies and gentlemen. There are people out there who say I tell bad jokes. And my response is I resemble that remark. But actually, I don't tell jokes. What I do is tell silly, disc jockey, you know, puns, that kind of thing. But that's as much as I do. So the people who say I tell bad jokes, I don't think I ever told more than one or two jokes on this show since 2006. That's a bad rap. And I don't even rap. That would be pretty bad, too. Imagine me.
Oh, but don't go there, please, Gene.
I'm not going. I feel gone. Okay, so once again, if people want to learn more about your public appearances, do the organizations that sponsor them present this, or do you have it on your site, or what?
Yeah, California MUFON, L.A. MUFON, Orange County MUFON. I'm not sure what they call the other chapter up there. It's the chapter up in San Jose. They have announcements on their sites. We have an announcement on the Paracast, and if you go to my website, there'll be one up shortly.
Well, we look forward to seeing that. And by the way, we're trying, really trying to update Chris's site, OurStrangePlanet.com. And most of it has been that the person who volunteered to do it has been occupied with other pursuits, starting a new business, the holidays, the family and everything. And he keeps saying he'll get to it. And I keep looking at better ways to present your site. So it's going to be updated soon. In the meantime, you know, check it out, OurStrangePlanet.com. And we'll see. Speaking of strange things, before we get into our special guest this week, and that's Nick Redfern, he's author of a new book called Keep Out, about top secret places governments don't want you to know about. Chris, have you ever been to any of these top secret places?
Well, I've been near a few, but of course I've never actually been to them. I've been on the infamous Mailbox Road, Area 51. I've been around the Skunk Works site, and back east I've been near some of the continuation of government facilities. I've scouted out potential locations for underground facilities in the San Luis Valley and around the New Mexico-Colorado border area. Of course, I've done extensive exploration around the Archuleta Mesa region, just north of the town of Dulce. And, you know, I've done quite a bit of tramping around. Of course, I've been a real fan of Richard Sauter's work, Underground Bases and Tunnels. What is the government trying to hide? We know of 129 underground, extensive underground facilities that are part of the public record, and that's probably just the tip of the iceberg. So we're going to have fun with Nick today.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be very interesting. I've never gone to any secret places, but I know that one of the things we're going to want to explore as we progress, and it's not a large part of the book. I understand he covers a lot of supposedly secret places there, and I want to get more into the London Underground and the London subway. Although I have to wonder about the New York subway. Speaking of secret places, you have to think the New York subway. Before we go anywhere else, the New York subway was first built in the 19th century. Okay? That's when it was first assembled. And you have to think with all those snaking tunnels, and it's one of the largest subway systems in the world, what lurks down there? You see all the horror movies about strange creatures and things lurking in the subways.
There's a whole... It's kind of a subculture that lives in the New York subways. There's a lot of homeless people that have turned abandoned, let's say, spurs that have been closed off by, you know, by the MTA. They've turned them into kind of squatters locations for, and people actually live down there.
You have to think also it's a pretty filthy place.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, all the vermin, all that stuff that's going on down there. I'm not thinking about snakes and strange creatures. But you have to wonder what can fester there. And later on, we're going to ask Nick about London and the London subways. I've never taken them. The other subways I've taken, well, Chicago, which are kind of similar to New York. Also, BART, which is the Bay Area Transit System, which is in San Francisco and around San Francisco. But that's pretty new, you know. So there's not enough years for strange creatures and filth to fester there.
Give it time, Gene.
It always gets there. You always have to wonder, though. You get the impression when you're writing those things that, you know, there's a cleanliness issue that isn't being dealt with. You know, it's kind of left kind of the second shrift. And I know there are a lot of dedicated people who work for this transit systems. In fact, my late father worked on the New York City transit system, mostly on the surface transit, which is the buses. But you always felt, you know, that you were treated as if, well, you have to ride a subway. Why can't you have a car? Of course, in New York, it's not like that. In New York, of course, lots of people take public transportation. But you get to a lot of other places, sometimes it's the second shrift. It's the second choice. It's the one for people who don't have cars. And you wonder if you don't have enough traffic, strange things might happen. Weird things that might be happening below the surface of the planet. Not necessarily Deros and Tiros. Okay?
Yeah.
Not necessarily caves or the vast cave systems, but lots of stuff going on. The book from Nick Redfern is called Keep Out. And he's coming up next with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident that the financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of the International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience and concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the cold hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? For a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster, subscribe now at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. Experience the difference. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain investment advice tailored just for you. Don't wait another minute. Subscribe today at theinternationalforecaster.com or call 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178.
Sure, there are winter specials, and then there are super winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Battle through this cold and flu season with powerful, natural, and safe flu fighters like Elderberry Power, Orgicillin, Olive Leaf Capsules, Grapefruit Seed Extract, and Respir 8, all specially priced during the winter sale at HerbalHealer.com. Don't forget Vitamin D3 this winter. Right now, HerbalHealer.com has 120 soft gels, 1,000 IUs, sale priced at only $9. We also have a super winter special on 6 homeopathic liquid detoxes: whole body detox, liver detox, kidney detox, lymph detox, brain detox, and lung detox. All liquid detoxes, regularly $26.95, are now just $20. HerbalHealer.com. As always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on now and save big when you hit the winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
If you don't want to be unprepared, BePrepared.com. BePrepared.com is the official site of Emergency Essentials, the 24-year leader in emergency preparedness. Why do they lead? Because of best value, best selection, and their low price guarantee. Take advantage of BePrepared.com's inventory reduction sale going on right now. Save up to 43% on food storage and emergency supplies. Up to 43%. For example, Be Prepared with freeze-dried peaches and strawberries, freeze-dried roast beef, 180 82-piece first aid kits, 9-meal MRE kits, a waterproof multifunction emergency LED flashlight for only $3.99, and much more. BePrepared.com. All supplies last. But hurry, sale ends when inventory's gone. Call 800-999-1863. That's 800-999-1863. Or online at BePrepared.com. BePrepared.com. Best value, best selection, and low price guarantee. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or BePrepared.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
This is the Redfern abode.
Is this in the underground in London?
Well, kind of, semi.
What does kind of semi mean? You mean you're half there and half not?
It means I'm ethereal.
Oh, boy. We have the ethereal, Nick Redfern. With Gene and Chris in the Paracast.
Welcome back.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Oh, it's going nicely. We're starting off the new year with you. And the question I have is, is it true that we bring you on just for the laughter, that great laugh?
Well, I forgot about that, actually. Yeah, I guess I can
you'd
do
have
a few
to remind
of those throughout
you.
The show. Yeah. I guess I can do a few of those throughout the show. So.
Okay, we'll give you a chance. Okay, the book All is right. called Keep Out. Now, what inspired you to seek the places around the world that governments don't want you to visit?
There's a couple of things, really. I mean, one of the things I would sort of point out to people is that the book isn't a study of, like, secret locations per se or period. It's ones that specifically have a link to UFOs, paranormal, or supernatural. So, in other words, you know, there are chapters on things like Area 51 and Hangar 18, but there aren't chapters on some vaults under the Pentagon or whatever. You know, I don't get involved in sort of political conspiracies, so it's just bases where people have made allegations about aliens and so forth. And with that said, I mean, one of the reasons why I sort of wanted to write the book is because, you know, everybody, when it comes to secret bases and UFOs, talks about Area 51. You know, that's the one that's become sort of ingrained in not just the UFO field, but popular culture as well. I guess within ufology, you know, its sort of little brother is Hangar 18 or the stories of Hangar 18 at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. You know, there are actually all around the world a lot of secret installations or off-limits installations is probably a better way of terming it, with links to UFOs, you know, military people coming forward. And I thought, well, you know, why not try, instead of just going over just Area 51, et cetera, why not bring forward some of these other stories about additional locations and facilities and, you know, demonstrate to people that the story of off-limits places with links to UFOs doesn't begin and end with Area 51.
Okay, looking, though, at the Area 51 specifically, okay, just for a short period of time, how then did this gain such attention as being the place to go for unusual goings-on?
Well, I mean, although Area 51 as a location, if you like, you know, has been around for decades, you know, I mean, literally decades, the issue of its sort of relationship to UFOs in terms of its lifespan is actually sort of a relatively recent one. Area 51 is actually just sort of one of a number of areas on what's called the Nevada Test and Training Range in the state of Nevada, which actually extends to more than 4,500 square miles. So it's like a huge area. And Area 51, as I said, is just part of it. Back in certainly in the 50s, we know that, you know, things like spy planes were tested from there, the U-2 and later on the Blackbird, the SR-71. Stealth technology was also experimented with and tested there. So in other words, the base has been an active location for decades, but it was pretty much under the radar, not just because of the secrecy, but simply because there was nothing that really captured anybody's imagination, you know, beyond the fact that unless you're an aviation spotter, you know, one of these people who goes out looking for planes or whatever. And it really was only in sort of the latter part of the 1980s that it sort of came to the fore with Bob Lazar's revelations about working at an aspect of Area 51 called S4. And, of course, you know, Lazar's story still exists and is circulated to this day. And there are many people who think he's, you know, an outright fraud, accept his story, you know, of alien craft being back engineered at the base. And in between those people, you know, there are other people who take the view that maybe Lazar was fed disinformation, but he did work there, but he was fed disinformation to hide the fact that maybe some of these UFOs actually secret military aircraft, and, you know, the government was happy to sort of perpetuate a UFO myth to hide some sort of deeper military program. So, in other words, I think the fact that, you know, we're still discussing Lazar 23, 24 years after he first surfaced, almost a quarter of a century, is a testament to the fact that we really don't have a clear picture of what goes on there. You know, if we did, we would have all the answers. So I think the Lazar story on its own demonstrates the secrecy surrounding Area 51 simply because, you know, we haven't been able to resolve the mystery.
Well, that's a good question, too, with Lazar. How much evidence has he produced that he's actually ever been down there? What, he got one stub of a paycheck that maybe he worked 3 or 4 hours somewhere?
Well, you know, I mean, this is the thing about Lazar that a lot of people kind of find intriguing and fascinating is that, you know, on the one hand, he doesn't come across like a normal hoaxer. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. You know, I mean, I've spoken to enough people within the UFO field that whereas most people, I think, you know, are honest and earnest, et cetera, hoaxers, particularly people who hoax UFO encounters, you often find the story gets embroidered upon and added to over time. And when a problem surfaces, you know, they explain it away by adding something else. You know, kind of like the George Adamskys, etc., where, you know, there's a new layer added to it every time somebody questions something. Lazar's story, regardless of what people say about it, actually hasn't changed at all. You know, he just said, well, this is what happened. And when people said, well, how about this? He said, well, I don't know. So in that sense, he doesn't come across like someone who's constantly adding to his story, embroidering on it, you know, every 2 minutes, so to speak. Lazar does actually have an interesting background. There's absolutely no doubt about that. For example, he was the subject of a front-page article in 1982 in the New Mexico-based Los Alamos Monitor newspaper. What's interesting is that he's identified in the newspaper back in 82 as working at Los Alamos's Meson Physics Facility, which is today called the Los Alamos Neutron Science Center, where a lot of sort of cutting-edge research into particle physics is undertaken. That's a provable fact that he did work there, and he also, you know, his number turns up in the Los Alamos phone book, the official phone book. Now, again, that's not, you know, hearsay rumor. That's fact. You know, if you can find a Los Alamos 1982 phone book, you'll see Lazar in there. That in itself is interesting. Now, another thing that kind of keeps the door open a little bit is that Lazar said that one of the people who was sort of instrumental in getting him an interview to work at Area 51 was Edward Teller, who he bumped into at a lecture in the early 1980s at Los Alamos. Now, if someone like Teller, of his sort of standing and, you know, historical position in, you know, the world, etc., in the U.S. government and, you know, the history of it, you know, somebody approached him and said, you know, this guy named Bob Lazar is telling this story about how you arranged for him to have an interview and that ultimately led him to working on alien spacecraft at Area 51, you would imagine that Teller would not just say no. You would imagine that Teller would simply say, you know, that's complete nonsense. I didn't give him any sort of window, if you like, to an interview at Area 51 at all. But that isn't what happened. Instead, what did happen is that when he was put on the spot by a TV journalist, Teller absolutely squirmed and tried to work his way out of even answering any questions about Lazar and just basically said something along the lines of, well, maybe I met him, and if I did meet him and I thought I liked him, maybe I referred him to somebody else, but I don't remember.
That was, you know, pretty weird, yeah. But before we get more weird, if you have a comment or question about the show, write us news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. The book is Keep Out by Nick Redfern with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When it comes to running a successful business, there are many things you have to get right. But one thing is often overlooked, and that's protecting the data that powers your business. Computers, servers, external hard drives, and even tape backups are vulnerable to failure. In the U.S. alone, over 140,000 hard drives fail each and every week. According to one study, only 7% of companies that lose their data centers for 10 days or more survive beyond the year. So I want to tell you about our friends at Mozy, the most trusted name in online backup. Give our friends at Mozy a call. They've been doing this for a long time and run the most secure, most trusted online backup service. Right now, you could save 15% by using the promo code PODCAST15. That's PODCAST15. Call 877-669-9776. That's 877-669-9776. Or visit MozyPro.com. That's MozyPro.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
In a coming-apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, tow line, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Ally C. Why Ally C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Ally C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Ally C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Ally C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Ally C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Ally C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ally C. For more information and to order Ally C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Ally C today.
Long-range patrol ration entrees. If you know survival, you know LRPs are the undisputed king of military rations. Hands down, the best for your bug-out bag or survival pack. To go farther, faster, and carry more food, there's nothing better than a brick pack LRP cold weather ration entree. Nothing. Now, the Freeze Dry Guy is offering a limited-time deal on thousands of fresh LRP entrees. We're talking a menu of tasty and nutritious beef stew, chicken and rice, chili mac with beef, spaghetti and meat sauce with 20 entrees per case. These fresh 2011 LRPs are U.S. government contract overruns, perfect for long-term storage. But they're going fast at freezedryguy.com. Far superior to MREs, long-range patrol entrees are about a third the weight of an MRE, with about a third more meat than the finest commercial freeze-dried entrees. Ask about multi-case discounts and free shipping when you call 866-404-3663 today. That's 866-404-3663 or freezedryguy.com. Your source for survival food in an uncertain world.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned in to the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
With Gene and Chris, you're in the Paracast talking to Nick Redfern. The book is called Keep Out. We're talking about Bob Lazar and Dr. Teller basically squirming his way out of it. And I remember the passage in the book. And I agree with you. That's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the thing about Lazar, is that everything about it is weird. There's nothing black and white. I mean, Stan Friedman made a famous statement. He said, you know, this is just bunk, bunk, bunk. That was Stan's words on the matter. But on the other hand, you know, people say, well, Lazar was this sort of kind of alternative, unusual guy. You know, he had a finger in a lot of different pies and he worked on sort of futuristic jet cars and all sorts of different things. Now,
yeah, in whorehouse surveillance systems.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And, you know,
in rocket-powered cars.
Rocket-powered cars, that's right. And, you know, my view, and this is actually being brought up, is that if you have, you know, if you're in charge of some sort of super secret program to back engineer crashed UFOs or recovered UFOs or donated UFOs, who knows how they got there, if they're there. But if you're working on that program and you want to maintain the secrecy, you don't get people in on the project who are some of the most famous people, you know, in the scientific world, who might possibly want to blow the whistle as a means to, you know, give themselves a place in historical legend for the next, you know, 2,000 years or whatever. What do you do instead? Well, maybe you hire maverick people who, on the one hand, are, like a lot of people, very brilliant but equally very alternative. And also you hire someone who maybe has a history and a background that if you need to discredit him, it can be easily done.
Well, that's the thing about his background, which is very important, claiming that he has certain levels of education. But it's kind of like the situation we ran into with Phil Imbrogno not too long ago, where you try to track down the person's educational credentials and you fall short. Yeah, can you be specific about this just so our listeners understand my context?
Yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of research has been done, you know, into not just Lazar's story, but precisely who Lazar is, you know, and where he came from, etc. Now, we know several things without beyond any shadow of doubt. One, he was born in 59 in Florida, and he attended the Los Angeles-based Pierce College in the 70s, where he took courses in electronics, and he spent some time employed with Fairchild, a company founded in 59 by the co-inventor of the transistor, William Shockley. Now, Lazar claimed and still continues to claim that he received an MS in electronics from Caltech and an MS in physics from MIT. Now, those two latter points, that's never been proved. You know, that's one of the big sort of sticky areas, if you like. But I won't say it's overrided, but it's compounded by the fact that we can prove he worked in a very responsible and intriguing position at Los Alamos in the early 80s. So, you know, if he didn't get the MS or the two MSs, one in electronics and one in physics, something opened the door for him to work at Los Alamos.
Well, is it possible he did what some people do, which is he falsified his credentials to get there, and once they realized it, they just said goodbye?
Well, I mean, that's not
pretty
impossible.
Unlikely.
I have no evidence of that, but I mean, you know, he wasn't fired from Los Alamos. You know, he talks about being fired from Area 51 and basically slung out. But, you know, he just moved on to different things after working at Los Alamos. But the fact is, you know, we can prove that he worked there. So in other words, if the only thing he did achieve was a course in electronics at Pierce College, it kind of sounds strange that he would be working at the elite of Los Alamos only a couple of years later. So I think, you know, there are certain parts of Lazar's story that are still sort of shrouded in mystery. But there are problems. You know, I don't deny that. And the educational background one where, you know, people have said, oh, well, the government's trying to just wipe out his history. You know, that's okay for a conspiracy thriller. But if you were to look into it, you know, there should be people who took classes with him that might remember him. Or there should be at least some paper trail. You know, the idea that the government would go into MIT and possibly remove every scrap of paper and the story of that removal never ever surfacing from anyone kind of sounds a little bit over the top to me.
It sounds like J&K in the movie Men in Black, where the Will Smith character had his entire life's history erased to become one of the men in black.
Yeah, and I don't think that's feasible to completely do that. But what I would say, you know, the fact that we have these other factors coming into play leaves the door open for me. You know, I find it difficult when it comes to Lazar to be black and white, because there's actually nothing black and white about his story. It's a shade of gray.
Okay, well, we're going to have to get him on the show one day, don't you think so, Chris?
Yeah, I think it would be great. One thing I want to say here is that respect George Knapp as being one of our top investigative journalists in the field and a longtime award-winning broadcaster and reporter and journalist for KSLV, I think, or KSAV, I think it's the NBC affiliate in Las Vegas. The very fact that George Knapp was the one that broke the Bob Lazar story, I think, carries a lot of weight in my book, because George, I know, dots his I's and crosses his T's, and if he was convinced that Lazar's story was real and was willing to come out and expose this story, then I think there was enough there to at least prove to Knapp that Lazar was legitimate.
Yeah, I think Lazar was legitimate in the sense that for a period of time he was out there. I do actually believe that. Now, the big question is, you know, the nature of what he actually saw. You know, by Lazar's own admission, he said that the staff there played, you know, all sorts of weird mind games on the people working there. And some of these kind of, you know, exposing him to not just the craft. You know, if you're working on craft of some sort of advanced technology, and, you know, you've been asked to work on the program and understand it and kind of improve it, so to speak, you know, that's one thing. But Lazar said he was also provided with masses of material on documentation, sort of classified documentation on super secret UFO programs and the history of an alien presence on Earth that was tied in with religion and all sorts of things. Now, you know, I could be entirely wrong, but for me, you know, if you're going to be working on a classified program, do you really need to be briefed on the intricacies of the entire alien presence? Maybe you do, but maybe you don't.
You know, you would think it would be more compartmentalized.
Yeah, but you could make the argument that maybe he was shown those documents to reinforce the idea that the craft that were held there were alien, when maybe they weren't. You know, I mean, one of the things that we do know he said in the exact same time frame that Lazar was at Area 51, and official files that have surfaced through the Freedom of Information Act actually reflect this, both the CIA and the Air Force's OSI, the Office of Special Investigations, were deeply worried that certain UFO researchers in the U.S. had been targeted by the Russians to unwittingly sort of uncover classified information on super-secret aircraft programs, but using their sort of UFO research to do so, sort of like a dangling carrot where the Russians would say, you know, go look for some sort of latest stealth news and we'll give you a few tidbits of the KGB's UFO secrets, you know, which were, themselves might be even fabricated. So in other words, we know that this was going on, that the Russians were trying to penetrate U.S. military aircraft programs, and in some cases were trying to use UFO researchers to do so in the time frame when Lazar said UFOs were Area 51. So one of the things I point out in the book, maybe, you know, Lazar was sort of like the biggest patsy since Lee Harvey Oswald and genuinely believed the things he saw at Area 51 were alien. But, you know, let's take the hypothesis maybe that when he was there, he saw the craft and then went public, started talking about it, and all that Area 51 security people have to do is wait for some guy like named Boris or Ivan to start wandering around the base or asking questions in Las Vegas, you know, which isn't a million miles away, and then move in and arrest them. And at the end of the day, they've arrested a spy who was sort of drawn into the web of looking for classified military programs by a UFO smokescreen. And more importantly, no real secrets have actually been revealed. You know, it's everything's been hidden under this UFO banner, and Ivan and Boris are safely behind bars somewhere.
So you're saying that there's a real good possibility this could have actually been a very elaborate and well-thought-out counterintelligence agenda.
Yes, but that doesn't take away the possibility that, you know, that parts of the story could be utterly real.
I'll tell you what, we have other agendas we have to follow. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt.
Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
Listeners, it's Jason Lewis, and now that the holidays have come and gone, it's time to get serious about our New Year's resolutions. For 2012, resolve to protect your most valuable asset, your family. Daily, we hear about all the crazy stuff happening around the world, unemployment, food shortages, natural disasters, just to name a few. For my preparation, I recommend WiseFoodStorage.com. WiseFoodStorage.com offers delicious ready-made meals like cheesy lasagna and savory stroganoff that are packaged for freshness in individual metal Mylar pouches and carry a 25-year shelf life. Visit WiseFoodStorage.com today to request a free entree sample. And for a limited time, enter the promo code Lewis to get no-cost shipping on any order. That's WiseFoodStorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE. That's 855-366-3947 and enter promo code Lewis for a free sample and free shipping on any order. Peace of mind, the greatest gift you can give to the ones you love.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television. So from outside, it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to faketv.com or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95, so get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to faketv.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
Ready to save while getting prepared? Then you're ready for the winter sale at 21stCenturyGoods.com. Take advantage of the incredible savings on all items at 21stCenturyGoods.com. Portable AM, FM, and shortwave radios from $19.95. American Red Cross emergency radios and Kato radios from $28.95. Solar lanterns from $22.95. Solar flashlights, two for $16.95. Hand crank LED hurricane lanterns and flashlights from $8.95. Be sure to check out the flexible solar panels to power your emergency and survival gear. Every order over $75 will receive a solar-powered flashlight absolutely free. So get prepared this winter by visiting 21stCenturyGoods.com. Spelled the number 2, the number 1, ST, CenturyGoods.com. 21stCenturyGoods.com. Or call 866-999-8422. That's 866-999-8422. 21stCenturyGoods.com. Power up your survival.
This is Kurt Seven, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
I guess I wasn't too bad. It's the first time I've practiced it since I was last on the show. So I don't actually sit at home doing that every time, every 10 minutes.
That's the secret of the great laugh from Nick Redfern, author of Keep Out, and the expert, the one who creates laughter for the Paracast with Gene and Chris. Just before we go away from Bob Lazar and conspiracies in Area 51, there's a story I read, and this, I guess, will be the last thing we talk about Area 51. It's from Lee Spiegel over at the Huffington Post, and I'll quote the headline, Area 51 Personnel Feel Betrayed by Annie Jacobson's Soviet Nazi UFO Connection. That's part of her Area 51 book, you know, where... The book itself was just coverage of what Area 51 is and what's going on, but she had to get a UFO, Roswell, Nazi connection. What's your take on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a really weird story. And what's ironic is that, you know, when Annie Jacobson's book came out, you know, it was the Area 51 tie-in with Roswell that really caught the media's attention. You know, I won't say they didn't talk about the rest of the book. You know, to a degree they did, but... You know, it seems that the Roswell thing was the one more than any other that really got people's attention. Now, you know, there have been a lot of different theories put forward for Roswell. I would have to say that this one, without doubt, is the most controversial because it, to me, just doesn't hang together. And I'll tell you why. You know, in her story, the idea was that the Russians basically were behind Roswell, and it was some sort of like a War of the Worlds type hoax, where they would stage like a UFO landing in the US, you know, with aliens, you know, coming out of the craft and basically, you know, send America into a state of panic that the aliens had arrived and the UFO invasion was beginning. You know, that the idea and the scenario of fabricating an alien attack to sort of, you know, to create fear or to instill a new world order, you know, is kind of an intriguing and an interesting one. But, you know, the story that was Annie Jacobson was told is very, very different. She was told that Stalin, Joseph Stalin, the Soviet premier at the time, was in cahoots with Joseph Mengele, the infamous Nazi doctor who did all sorts of, you know, sort of terrible medical experiments on people and very often on children as well. And the story was that Mengele sort of mutated, it's probably the best way to describe it, a number of young children. And the idea was that they were loaded into an aircraft based on the designs of the Horton brothers, who built the sort of swept wing glider type aircraft back in the 40s for the Nazis. And the idea was that the craft was flown to the United States and it would land in a populated area, and you know, these deformed, mutated children would get out and people would believe aliens had landed. The story is made bizarre for several reasons. One, Mengele, you know, we know had fled to South America. You know, he wasn't in Russia. He wasn't even in Germany in 47. The other thing is that, again, through the Freedom of Information Act, we have literally hundreds and hundreds of pages of files from the mid-40s onwards, from the U.S. Air Force and the Army, where they've been analyzing captured Horton brother aircraft and, you know, analyzing the data and photographs. So, in other words, it would take nobody any time at all to realize that this is one of the Horton brothers' craft. But it wasn't an alien spacecraft. You know, the idea of it landing in the U.S., an aircraft, would need tires. You know, it would take no time at all to realize that this is just made purely with terrestrial materials. And also, you know, I question the idea of whether people could be biologically mutated back in the 1940s to any extent to where, you know, not only would they look alien, but they would actually be able to sort of live and exist and, you know, move around, etc., you know. So I think, again, I speculate and wonder if somebody on the inside was concerned that Jacobson was writing a book about Area 51 that would be a big expose. So what do we do? Well, let's try and, you know, discredit it by putting out a really outrageous story that's, you know, going to basically get everybody's attention, but by default, make it just another UFO book rather than, as some people may have worried, a definitive study of Area 51.
Well, at this point, do we think that maybe Annie Jacobson was thrown this line of stuff just to make the book gain more attention?
It may have been to gain more attention, but I don't think from the perspective of selling copies. I think it may be that people on the inside may have been anticipating and hoping that the response would be exactly what I've just said about how the story, you know, of Mengele and Stalin just doesn't work. You know, it is not credible. So maybe the hope was that by pointing that out, then that will by default make people question the rest of the book. You know, if they couldn't stop the publication of the book, well, you know, let's put something in there that's going to, like, she's going to accept and publish, and then, you know, over time it'll come to discredit the rest of the book, which, you know, actually does contain a lot of good information.
So that takes us from Area 51 to the next topic. And Chris and I were joking before you came on about subway systems around the world, these underground labyrinths of unknown happenings. I was thinking about New York. I grew up in New York. I lived virtually on the subways. When I wanted to skip class, I'd just go on a subway ride. You know, I go from one end of New York City to the other. Now you know my secrets, ladies and gentlemen. But you're talking mostly about, I guess, a system that's pretty old itself, the underground or subway system in London. Tell us more about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the London Underground, you know, is the one sort of mode of transport that pretty much everybody uses in London. You know, sort of driving around London's pointless. You know, you're never going to get anywhere because there's that much congestion. So everybody just uses the tube, and, you know, there's a whole range of lines and tunnels, etc. A lot of people don't realize that the London Underground, which actually was first opened in 1863, is basically, although it's, you know, it's like an open tube system full of trains, etc., it has a lot of secrecy attached to it. For example, during the Second World War, when the Nazis were sort of on a nightly basis bombing London during what was called the Blitz, people who were living in London, you know, when the sirens would go off, everybody would head down to the tubes, to the tunnels, because they were very deep underground. And, you know, they gave a lot of protection from Hitler's bombings every night. And, you know, this was sort of like a plan that the government itself, the British government, organized, you know, for where the tracks would be closed and people could bring, like, sleeping bags and pillows down, you know, and just sort of sleep through or survive at least the nightly blitzes and, you know, get some sort of protection. We also know that also during the Second World War that the Prime Minister at the time, Winston Churchill, he used what was called the Downstreet Station, where he had a secret office deep underground, again, to sort of survive these nightly attacks from the Germans. So in other words, you know, what seems like an innocuous, normal tunnel system for trains, etc., is actually something quite different. Now, there are also a lot of other weird stories, not just of a UFO nature, but more of like a 14 nature as well, coming from the London Underground. There's a long-standing story about some sort of deep underground chamber where supposedly a crashed UFO and alien bodies are held. Now, even I admit some of these stories, you know, they're kind of a friend-like, and they're sort of the classic Hangar 18 type things where somebody goes through a wrong doorway and, you know, goes to an off-limits area and sees these weird little bodies in frozen cryogenic storage. So, but the stories do exist. There are even weirder ones than that where people have said that, you know, they saw sort of like spectral, almost Bigfoot-type creatures deep in the tunnel, sort of spectrally coming through the old walls and things like this. And, you know, it's difficult to sort of reconcile these stories. You know, I write a lot about cryptozoology as well, and some of these stories fit more into that category than ufology or anything conspiratorial.
So do we assume, like, a place like the London Underground has dimensional portals, perhaps?
Well, you know, I mean, that's getting into sort of another realm. But, I mean, you know, when you've got sort of four or five different issues all focused on this one location, you know, you do sort of have to question whether or not there's something more significant about it. You know, people talk about sort of portals and doorways and, you know, different parts of the world. I mean, it's difficult to know. You know, London's an ancient city. You know, its founding fathers sort of go back, you know, to the Roman times even. So, you know, in that respect, who knows what sort of secrets exist under London. But it is intriguing. You know, the more you dig into the stories of the London Underground, you find tales of closed down tunnels and stations, you know, that are now off limits, where over the years, you know, the tunnels have gone in different directions and the old tunnels just remain closed to the public. And, you know, there are bunkers under there for the government and, you know, all these stories about weird. There's a lot of weird stories about big cats being seen in the London Underground, kind of similar to the alligators in the sewer stories from New York. And again, you know, it's kind of like, where does the legend begin and the facts end, so to speak?
We'll get into that in a moment, but I guess the big question would be here, anytime you have this network of underground tunnels or caverns, weird stuff's going to be down there, inevitable, with Nick Redfern, author of Keep Out. You're with Gene and Chris, because you're in
the Paracast.
Ho, ho.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24-7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.